Morning. I'm the last speaker between yours and lunch, so I'm going to try to make it short. It may not be sweet, but we'll try to wind it up. And unlike these other gentlemen, I'm just a poor consultant from Southwest Georgia, but we've been in business 31 years in the same area, and we've seen cotton make a comeback. Luckily, we have a variety of crops. We're about 70% irrigated, so we still plant corn, and we have never left a lot of, we got down pretty low on corn, but I still had some growers that had corn, and we have a good many peanuts in our area, as you know. We don't plant a lot of cotton back-to-back. 2 years about back-to-back cotton and a year of peanuts, or either we put a year of corn in there with the peanuts. So that's basically what our rotation. Just going to touch on a few things. Most of these gentlemen have already covered. In fact, I'm going to have some slides up here that I know Brad had, but thanks to Sandy Newell with BASF. But I'm going to try to enlighten you maybe on maybe some of the problems that happened, and we'll get on from there. So in my area in Southwest Georgia, we didn't see a lot of disease problem this year. Now over in the extreme southeast part of the state, it was a problem. And there's no doubt that foliar diseases can be a problem, but sometimes they seem to be isolated in a year like this over in the southeast. Some years are worse than others, and some fields seem more susceptible than others. And that's something we might touch on as we get on into it. And do weather patterns drive disease development? I think the answer to that is most likely and yes, because I know the east side of the state, we were extremely dry. We were irrigating a lot, but they had a hurricane that come up. Now, we had one in late August, but they had one earlier, and they had a lot of rain. And like I say, in 08, the disease seemed much worse in southeast Georgia than the rest of the state, and our foliar disease is getting worse. At least four of the main problem diseases, and they've touched on a lot more, but Cercospora and Alternaria and Stemphylium and the mildew. Here's just a few brief pictures of which y'all all have seen, so I'm going to skip over those and get on with those. How severe can the problem be? In my area, 95% of the cotton we plant is 555. But these few spots can develop into this, so it can be a problem. This is a field of 555, which was defoliated in mid-August, and probably that field was 6 weeks premature defoliated. So the yields were definitely hurt, I'm sure, but the reason being why, and that was over in southeast Georgia, an area that I don't cover, and like I say, some of this data I had to get to present this presentation were from some of the different counterparts that I work with. Do fungicides work? I think there's no doubt about do they work, depending on what causes, but here's untreated headline at 6 ounces. This is the field that Brad showed a little while ago. It's over in southeast Georgia. You can tell the untreated and headline at 6 ounces. But let's examine some of the things. I'm going to go a little bit further and maybe why that we can look at. He was right. This field was about 370-something pounds, I think, difference in yield. So let's look at what may have caused this. In this field here, the grower went out and pulled now potassium deficiency. I think and Glenn Harris and I think Bob have done a lot of work, and it's pretty well documented, I think, in our area that potassium deficiency can drive disease development. Potassium deficiency causes those weak cells in the plant, which allows disease to, you know, which drives the disease. These are not that significantly different, but in my opinion, in my area, if I had fields that were that low, then, you know, we try not to get that low, but when you look at the petiole, in my opinion, those are significantly different, and that was untreated and treated. But the question could be is, why is it higher in the treated? Did the treatment of headline help the uptake of the potash from the soil and the disease that moved in, since it was not treated, if he had a problem, did it, you know, prevent the uptake of potash through the foliage in the petiole? And there it is. Did disease foliage affect uptake K, or did lower K level drive disease, and why in the treated level? I think Bob right here made the comment that you got to start off with enough potash. I think on cotton as well as other, if you cut fertilizer, you're going to cut yields. I know you are in my area, In my area, we run from a Greenville soil all the way down to Lucy and America soils, which are real sandy. Since we've been in the cotton business, we've always had some cotton. We put out whatever we soil test each year, and we put out our soil amounts, but we always trim about 20 to 30 pounds off. If it calls for 100 pounds a K, then we'll put 70 to 80, and we come back with our nitrogen before first bloom. It's a habit that our growers develop, and it seems to work well, and especially helps us on our deep sand. We will side dress all our cotton with 20 to 30 pounds a K in with our nitrogen before first bloom, and that usually carries us. We used to pull petio samples on every field that we had. We would run 200 and 300 petio kits a year. And over those years, we probably, over 20 years of testing, we probably had less than five that ever come back with low K. And usually it was with heavy rain events, and it was real sandy soil, such as Lucy or America's. So I think that's something that needs to be looked at, that needs to be. And maybe some growers are trying to trim, and that's the reason of the uptake on the petios. This here, this come from over in East Alabama from Dr. Leonard Kuykendall. And as you see, now this was a large plot strip, so he had two that was 211 and 98. But when you look down here in the large plot replicated, then it was a very, you know, sort of insignificant gain, 35, maybe 38 being the highest, down to 11. And that's basically, we did an infield on-farm trial with Headline this year, and we had just a little increase in yield, but it really wasn't enough to pay for the application if you'd considered, but we did mix it in with our Mepoquats, and like I say, we did not have any potassium problems or anything going on that. But this did come out of East Alabama, and I think this is what you've heard from most of the speakers. And is there value in using fungicides on cotton? I think there is definitely if you need it, if you knew you were going to have the problem. The question is, what conditions need to occur to make the application most cost effective? And I don't know the answer yet. But we do know, talking here in this panel talk, fungicides must be used preventatively. Well, that takes money. It's like buying car insurance. You've got to have it because you don't know whether you're going to have a wreck or not. But, you know, they've got to be used preventatively, and we don't know whether we're going to have the problem. And the trick is knowing when to pull the trigger. And we're still in the learning use of fungicides, I think. One of the biggest things that I think, and Bob's doing more work is this, is I think we lose more problems where we have, now years like that field there, but in my area, bowl rot and hard lock. So that's something I think we still need to address. And learning to use the fungicides. We have learned to use fungicides on grain, on corn. 8 years ago, I sprayed corn for the first time, and nobody was spraying corn, but we knew we had rust coming in from the south, and a lot of growers didn't spray. Well, it made us look like a hero with our growers, and then for several years after that, we didn't need to spray corn. Maybe the last 2 years, we've seen more rust development come in, and where we sprayed corn, we have had significant increases. So I think this is still, we're in the learning use of fungicides on cotton, and we still got to tweak it and see, and what does the future bring in my area? We're going to plant 555 two more years if we can get the seed in 2010. We know we're going to get it in 2009. If we can get it in 2010, we're going to plant it. What about the new varieties? Are they going to be different? Or what's the deal? So there's a lot of unanswered questions, but I think it's still that I can't go out to my growers and suggest that they spray every acre with a fungicide of the data I've seen. But it's something that we're going to continue to look at and see if we can't find a niche, because if we can make our growers $1 an acre more after all his expenses, then it would be worth the trip. $1 an acre more after he add one more dollar to his bottom line, and it would be worth the deal after all the expenses. But if it doesn't, because we're all in the same boat, if the grower doesn't make money, we're not going to stay in business and we're not going to make money. But Board, I appreciate you asking me, and that's briefly the presentation.
Noticed any difference in different rotational crops or cotton, fallen cotton, leaf spots or even bowl rocks, especially leaf spots?
I haven't noticed any in bowl rock. And in my area, leaf spot has never been much of a problem. And we've been on that rotation, which I explained, where very few times do we go over 2 years with back-to-back cotton.
But there's no more of a problem.
So I, right.
Jack, you caught a question. Hey, what is your growers, the growers you work for, what's their perception of the importance of foliar disease on cotton? And B, what's their interest in spraying cotton?
At this point right now, I don't think there's a lot of interest in the growers spraying cotton. Now, I think that they are, you know, at these meetings they're going to and the publications they read, it's starting to tweak their interest a little bit. But as you know, the biggest thing is, and I'm not picking on BASF or Syngenta, but fungicides skyrocketed. We use a world of fungicides on peanuts, and we use a lot of Abound. And headlines you used a lot, too. And so fungicides skyrocketed. And when growers look at the cost of fungicides, you know, they don't want to do it unless they know 98%, maybe 99% that they need to do it, and it's going to make them money.
You showed K ratings up there.
Right.
Unfortunately, you know, that K is what triggers a lot of fungicide use.
Right.
If you get a deficit, and it's weak, it becomes a weak fungicide.
Right.
And you talk about putting out 30 pounds of K at first bloom.
Right. Well, basically, back in when cotton started making the comeback, because I started the consulting business in 78 and had about 2,500 acres of cotton then, and now it's grown to over 15,000 acres. But when cotton really started making the comeback, like I say, our soils can range from a Greenville, which is a red sandy loam, I call it a red clay, but anyway, it's red sandy loam, all the way down to America's, where it's hard to get a root system down. I have growers that have the same deal. A lot of the growers, they have so many acres, they want to be able to do the same thing. The only thing that we'll do, now we soil sample and we soil test. If we have high levels in a field, and I'm talking about 175, 180, or even 200 pounds, then we will leave our fertilizer application of potash off. But when we come back and side dress, we will side dress 30 pounds, and we have seen this on these sandier soils. Like if they call for 100 pounds or 120 pounds, then maybe we'll put 90 and come back with 30. And on our patios, like I said, for 10 years of running over 200 kits, I would say out of those 10 years with 200 kits, we only saw maybe 5 that we ever had to try to come back and foliar feed potash. And if there's anybody in here that knows a good way to foliar feed potash, I don't know what I want to know, because there is no way. I reckon if you had a boiler out there and could heat potassium nitrate up, it would be good, because if you're not putting at least 5 pounds out through the foliage, then you're not doing any good. Some of these other products that a lot of these companies have, you know, they're okay, but we haven't seen that much great deal with them. So we try to correct the problem. The best thing to do is, like you've heard it about weed control and everything, try to correct the problem before you have the problem.